This is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to this week's show. This episode of Fragmented is sponsored by BuddyBuild. BuddyBuild is a mobile-optimized continuous integration and delivery platform, and it just takes a few minutes to set up. Now, there's lots of folks that depend and love BuddyBuild because it's one of the fastest ways to build, test, and distribute, and even gather feedback on their apps. So you can go ahead and just perform a git push, new builds will be kicked off, it'll run your UI tests in parallel on real actual devices, which is kind of cool, and it'll deploy, when it's done, to your test users via Slack or email. Now the cool thing is they have this built-in crash reporting and screenshot mechanism where it will actually allow your users to send you feedback directly to you, along with some, of course, important device diagnostic details. Now if you don't have a continuous integration server or you're not happy with your current one, definitely give BuddyBuild a shot. Now, if you're not familiar with what continuous integration is and you want to learn more, take a few minutes, go listen to episode 12 here on the Fragmented Podcast, where we talk about continuous integration and collective code ownership. It's a real short one. We hope it's worth your time. Again, if you're interested, check out BuddyBuild at fragmentedpodcast.com/BuddyBuild. Again, that's fragmentedpodcast.com/BuddyBuild.
So Don, a listener some time back, and this is like
February, I think, right?
February, yeah, early this year. Stu, a listener, basically shot a request to us asking, hey, why not talk about annotations and annotation processing?
Yeah, I saw that. That was a great idea.
Yeah, a fantastic idea. And we had the perfect person in mind to talk about this, but somehow the timing never worked. But today, the clouds have parted, the sun is shining. Everything is working perfectly well, and we have our good friend Mike today. So welcome to the show, Mike.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
So Mike, for the listeners who may not be familiar with your work or any of your presentations that you've given around the country and so forth, can you give them a little bit of background on yourself, kind of how you got involved in Android, where you are right now in Android, maybe where you work and so forth?
Yeah, so right now I'm the Android lead at Living Social. I'm a Google developer expert for Android. Probably see me online as a moderator of the Android Dev subreddit and occasionally blog and speak at conferences. And I got involved in Android a few years ago just as a Android enthusiast, had an Android phone and thought, hey, it'd be cool to put some apps on here.
I've always felt annotations as this sort of like intimidating thing. But I remember all of us, Don, you were there as well for DroidCon NYC, right?
Yep.
The last DroidCon. And I know Mike gave a presentation. We'll add a link to that in the show notes. So that's when I actually got an understanding of, oh, okay, so this is how you actually write an annotation. Because otherwise, it seems like this whole black box kind of thing, right? It's always been very, it's been this scary thing. But actually, it's not too scary. And Mike was very helpful in his presentation and he explained that. So we thought, why not just talk about these things? So let's start off, what exactly are annotations? So in the world of Java, what exactly are annotations?
Yeah, so they're just kind of pieces of metadata that you can put on like various parts of a class or method or field that instruct the compiler something.
So typically, I imagine this is Java's mechanism. I mean, I was talking to another developer some time back and they essentially call this like Java's black magic mechanism, right? Because I know a couple of other languages allow you to like meddle. You know, there's like the whole metaprogramming concept with Ruby. It's not necessarily the same, but in some ways it does achieve that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like a very cool thing for the language that you can kind of grab like language data at runtime.
So if you were to explain annotations to someone, you know, to a beginner, you're sitting down paraprogramming with them, how would you explain annotations to them so that they could kind of wrap their head around it and be like, ah, okay, I think I have it now.
I think it's one of those things where it's best demonstrated through example. So like something like the at override annotation is a great example to show somebody like, hey, now you get some enforcement from the compiler that this method overrides a parent class's method. Or one of the other like annotations, nullability or something like that.
Now, there's a whole bunch of libraries out there that already provide a bunch of annotations to get rid of a bunch of boilerplate code. Some of the more popular ones that I think we're all kind of familiar with are going to be things like retrofit or butterknife or autovalue. Did you use any of these types of libraries to kind of gain a foothold on annotations so you can learn how to write your own? Or how did you kind of get your footing in the annotation world?
Yeah, so I think Butterknife was one of the first ones that I thought was particularly interesting. But I think the real one that kind of made it click for me that it was really interesting was Airbnb's Deep Link Dispatch.
Oh, okay.
Butterknife is a great example if you're kind of interested in annotation processor because it's also very simple. But those two both are really well architected, and it's very easy to see kind of how things work. So definitely if you're interested in like checking out some simple ones, those are good places to look.
And I've noticed like probably the most powerful mechanism of annotations is like the whole code generation process, mm-hmm. right? For yeah. example, like all these like Butterknife, Dagger for that matter, Retrofit, a lot of these things generate code for you, right? And essentially it's that's the mechanism of like eliminating boilerplate.
Yeah. So machines, I mean, obviously are much better at doing repetitive tasks and not making mistakes. So I think like the Butterknife is a great example. Very easy to copy and paste find view by ID a whole bunch of times, and maybe you don't put the right ID in when you're copy and pasting. So like, why not use an annotation and let the machine write the find view by ID calls and cast?
Ah, perfect. So I guess that's the way to think about it, right? Like essentially, if you find that you have a bit of code that's like repeating constantly throughout your application, throughout multiple applications that you write, then an easy way to sort of tackle that is slap on an annotation. And that basically tells like the compiler, hey, there's like some metadata associated with it. And then it knows to generate the code at that point. Do you think that's like a fair assessment of how one should think about annotations?
That exact scenario kind of happened for us. So with the Deep Link Dispatch example, we had some code in our app that we wrote to parse the URIs and figure out which activities and what intent parameters would go with each URL. And then when I saw that annotation processor, I thought, like, why not have a machine do this for me? That way, when I want to update or add a route, it's really easy. Just add an annotation to my activity as opposed to kind of updating this parser and making sure that, you know, I didn't break anything.
Oh, good point. And is there a mechanism of, like, testing it? Is that a possibility? Like, can you write testing code for your annotations?
I mean, you can test the annotation processor.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But, and I guess you can write tests that, like, you know, would run through and make sure that the code is executed.
So now for the annotations themselves, where at in the process, or what does recognize that, hey, there's this annotation there? Is that something that's just built into Java, or was this bolted on? Is it part of a specific library you have to include? Where does these hooks take place? Is it a special compiler or anything like that?
Yeah, so the annotation processors was added as part of Java 1.6, and it's just the kind of, there's a spec for it, and you can register your annotation processor with the compiler, and it gets run as part of the compiler process.
So the compiler kind of just sees that you have these annotations, and I guess you've registered with them, and then there's a process, which I think we'll talk about here in a little while, that kind of there's a little hook that gets called, and kind of code generation or whatever you're telling the annotation to do, and that's where all that execution takes place. Does that sound about right?
Yep.
A quick follow-up point. You said it was Java 1.6, right? So most of these annotations that we're talking about, the annotation processor, so like the whole code generation thing, that's when like it came alive in 1.6.
Yeah, so I think in Java 1.5, like the first annotations appeared, like the add override and suppress warnings, but I think the annotation processing APIs didn't exist until 1.6.
Right, and there was always things like deprecated, transient, which are also like annotations, right? So
yeah.
I mean, technically those existed pre-1.6. But you bring up a good point. So I think it might make sense to transition into like the different types of annotations. For example, I know override, you said, has like a compile time check. That isn't necessarily code generation, right? So are there like different kinds of annotations? How do we think about it? Because like we started out, annotation seems like this black magic thing that basically says, hey, this is where like I'm going to try and make Java nicer and just do things automatically.
Yeah, so annotation processors are not the only key to using annotations. Like probably the most popular annotations people use nowadays come from the support annotations library, and those don't have any annotation processing going on at all.
Oh, interesting.
What do those annotations do? Do you know how they work? And like, for example, like the nullable or non-null, what do those annotations do?
They're just, I think, override their like compiler hints.
Do you know how one would write those? Like, is that something that we can even do? Or is that something that is involved in, if you actually write your own JVM or you fork the JVM or do something along those lines, that's when you would write that?
I believe that it's part of the like the build tools. Not required like its own JVM process. I think it's just part of the Gradle like compilation stuff that the build tools team provides.
Gotcha.
But it would be possible if you were so inclined, if perhaps the nullable or non-null annotation didn't exist already and you had that idea, you could possibly go implement that with your own custom annotations, right?
Yeah, actually the IntelliJ team already had the non-null and nullable annotations pre the support annotations library.
Yeah, I remember.
The Android team didn't come up with that one.
Now, there's also other Android-related annotations, such as color int and color res and string res and layout res. Those are all the ones that are in the annotation support library. Is that right?
Yeah, so they, a couple of months ago, I guess, added those, maybe more than that, maybe a year ago. And they've actually been adding fairly regularly lots of new ones that I think kind of are lesser known. Like they've added ones that allow you to specify what thread some code should run on, like at main thread or worker thread. And then there's some other ones that don't come up incredibly often, but when they do, they're super helpful. There's ones like float range and int range that you can use to denote that a lat long will be between certain values. And one that I really like that has actually like saved me a lot of time from figuring out why I think code isn't working is the check result annotation that allows you to tell that the method returns something that you need to care about. So maybe like string operations like trim or uppercase, if you just call them, it's not going to modify the string. And you might wonder, hey, why is my string not being trimmed? Well, you need to care about the result of those methods.
So one question I always had as well, what's the advantage of adding those annotations in your code, right? Like if you're writing the code, then you already know those checks need to be done. So like what exactly is the advantage of having them? But I guess here the thing is, if you write like a library or you write code that you expect someone else to work off of, then slapping those annotations on becomes helpful.
Sometimes it's good for just documenting what maybe a method does, like just saying that this method is not expecting to take a null string, or it's expecting a color res instead of just a color int.
Which I find those ones are probably the most useful. I've always found like if you're building something and you're kind of extracting out resources and you want to use like integers or anything like that to kind of abstract away just some common code you're using all over the place and some utility, I want to throw like at color int on there to make sure that no one passes in some random integer that doesn't work. And given all of the support library kind of built-in annotations, do you have any that you would recommend folks to use that are kind of low-hanging fruit to say, hey, look, these are the ones you can kind of get some immediate value out of?
Yeah, I mean, all the resource ones and the nullable, non-null are super easy. One thing that was recently added in, I think, Android Studio 2.0 was the infer nullability. So you can run it and it will automatically kind of run through your code and check to see where it can add the nullable and non-null annotations. And then in Android Studio 2.2, they added infer support annotations that can actually infer the string resource and other resource qualifier annotations for you. And same thing with requires permission, can kind of look through your code and add those for you.
Oh, sweet.
Is that inside the analyze menu? Is that where you do that? Or
yeah, I think it's through the analyze menu. I usually just use the type in the action with Command Shift A and then just type in infer support annotation.
Oh, okay.
Oh, very cool. So, I mean, how do you go about your development with that process? So every time you write your code or you're about to like check in some code, do you run it or do you have it auto linked in some way?
Nothing automatic. You know, when you're writing maybe some business logic, if you're expecting that null is something available to you, you know, you can say that this parameter is nullable, or we know that this method is not going to return null ever. You know, you can annotate the return type. So just kind of add that as part of documenting as we go, which works out great. You're using Kotlin, big plug for that. That the Kotlin types kind of work well with the support annotation. So if you say something is nullable in Java, when you go to use Kotlin interrupt, it like infers to use the nullable type in Kotlin and vice versa.
You also had a blog post recently or some time back about improving your code with the Android support annotations, right?
Yeah, it's a little outdated now, but it kind of went through a lot of these ones we talked about, or at least the ones that existed at the time, and just, you know, made mention of them because I think a lot of people aren't aware that they exist. And then it talked about one that was kind of one of my favorites for a while and didn't quite work at the time, but then the tools team added support, I think, in part of the Gradle 2.0 plugin, which is Keep. So I kind of think that the ProGuard rules are very hard to understand sometimes. It's kind of this like cryptic language. And yeah, so being able to just put at Keep on a method or class was like a super easy way to just say, okay, I want to keep all this code from being ProGuard.
If we have, you know, we've talked about these annotations and ones that have kind of shipped with various products, ones that ship from the Android team, the build and the tools team. Now, you know, getting back to brass tacks here, if I have an idea, let's take the wild case that Butterknife didn't exist. And I thought, you know what? I want to implement something like Butterknife. That means I need to write my own annotation. And so like, that's real easy. I can just go into Android Studio. I can create a new file, create it as an annotation. But at that point, it doesn't do anything. It's just kind of like this weird little marker class. It's just kind of hanging around. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to actually do something, that means I need to use an annotation processor. Now, can you tell us a little bit about annotation processors, any history about them, or maybe how they work, or just anything in general, so we can kind of start learning about how to create our own custom annotations that actually do something useful?
Yeah, so if you're interested in hearing very good breakdown of the specifics of how like the annotation processor rounds work, Jake Wharton did a great talk at DroidCon 2014 and went through how the rounds work and how you know, one annotation processor will maybe run and then maybe another one depends on the output of that one. It's a really good breakdown of how the internals work.
Jake Wharton. Gotta look the
guy
up.
Yeah, I don't know. Who's that guy?
Yeah, pretty unknown guy.
So now we do know that there are a few steps that's involved in writing your own annotations. Have you written a lot of annotations, Michael?
I haven't. I've kind of written like a couple toy ones, but I've contributed to a couple of the more popular open source ones.
Now, there's a few steps that the annotation processors have to go through at a high level. Is there any way you could walk us through just the high level what those steps are? Does it have to, you know, run through some type of code generation cycle, or what does the processor do when we're writing our own annotations?
Yeah. So when you want to write your own annotation processor, it's a pretty simple process, really. You just kind of have to use a metadata file to register that you're the class that's going to do the processing with the compiler. And then after that, you just implement the abstract processor class, and it gives you a couple helpful methods. And like, there's this main process method that kind of does all the like lifting, kind of passes you, you know, references to the annotations, so you can use the annotation processor methods to kind of iterate through your code and do your like quote unquote metaprogramming.
Interesting. In your talk, you essentially broke it down to three parts. I remember because like Don was mentioning, you can create your own, like just creating the annotations is not too difficult. And I mean, I used to go bonkers with Dagger. I remember we write annotations, and yeah, especially if you want to qualify like a dependency in a specific way. So if you're returning the two of the same types of objects, you can create an annotation, slap it on with Dagger, and it understands that that's like a qualifier annotation, right? So creating those are pretty straightforward, and like it's dumb. But I guess if you want to take it to the next level, then you start to add more stuff, which is what like Don was alluding to. And you mentioned that's how like you mentioned the specifics. At a broader level, I remember in your talk, you said there are like three parts to it. There's like annotations, there's like the compiler, and then there's this API component, right? Can you walk us through what each of those modules do?
Yeah. So the quick kind of run through is the first piece is the thing that you guys kind of both mentioned, the declaring the annotation. So annotations can take parameters, and you can use the at target annotation in your annotation to tell the compiler like what types are like eligible to have this type annotated by. And then there's the compiler piece, which is the thing that actually does the processing, gets kind of in this case, or in the case of like Butterknife or Dagger, does the code generation. Mm-hmm. And then the API, quote unquote, is the part of your calling code that calls into the generated code. So in the Butterknife case, you call your butterknife.bind, and then that does the lookup to figure out which of the generated class files goes with maybe your activity and has all the find view by ID and set on click listener stuff, and kind of hooks everything all up.
And you said all of these are like jars, right? So how exactly do we package it? Do we actually write the, what is the process of packaging this thing?
You usually see that annotation processors are packaged with two components, something that someone tells you to copy and paste, like an APT line, mm-hmm. and then, you know, a compile line. The compile line is the part that is going to be the quote unquote API, the thing that your code calls. And then the APT magic is the annotation processor itself. And then the APT thing that people tell you is just a Gradle plugin that kind of makes annotation processing work a lot better with, say, Android Studio.
An interesting thing when you're working with these annotations, I'm going to go back to step one in a little bit, but in these annotations, you can actually provide values inside of those annotations. So you can provide, it could be an integer value that you want to pass in. And if you're familiar with using Dagger, you can provide like an array of various, when you're using Dagger and like modules or components, you can inject, say, hey, this is the injects array. These are all the items it's going to inject. So you can provide values to these annotations, which you can then pull out during the processing time of the annotation, while you're processing the annotation. So you can provide that metadata to the processor to do some extra stuff, to provide, to do some logic on and so forth. So, which is also very valuable.
There's a great example in the Butterknife case. You can pass the IDs of the views, or in the deep link dispatch case, you can pass the URI that you want to register as the deep link path for that activity.
Which then at that point, the processor would, when the processor is invoked at compile time or whatever, it can then look at those IDs in the Butterknife case and say, all right, well, I know I need to go find these IDs. Okay, look, looks like we are going to be, you want me to bind this to I'm using the bind annotation, and here's the ID, and looks like the type is button. And then the processor at that point can automatically just infer, saying, hey, looks like I got this ID, I need to use find view by ID. I already know what type I am by reflection. I can then just automatically cast that and kind of write that code for you, which is what the processor is kind of doing. Does that sound about right?
Yep. You can even look at the generated code after you do a build. If you look through Android Studio and see, and it looks pretty similar in the Butterknife case of the code you would have written yourself, with the find view by ID methods and setting click listeners and whatever other annotations used from the Butterknife package.
Yeah, and so you mentioned you can actually see the code, right? Is there any special setting that we have to do, or can we just start seeing this in Android Studio?
Yeah, so when you use the APT plugin, that's part of one of the benefits of using it, is that it puts those classes into a place that's visible for Android Studio. It doesn't put them as source files in your project. You have to look under the build directory.
Yeah, I think there's actually inside the builder, it's your build directory, and inside there's a generated folder, and I think there's source, and then you can kind of walk down into your package name, depending if it's debug or test or whatever, and then you can start to see where this code is generated. And a lot of times these classes will have a dollar sign in them, which is, denoting that it's part of, what are your main fragment or whatever else you're working with. So you can kind of check it out inside the build directory.
I would actually suggest our listeners, both of you mentioned, go and see open source repositories, because it actually makes a lot of sense now. Even with Butterknife, if you actually see the different annotations, the very first thing that's defined is target, right? You can specify that, hey, target this against a method. And that just goes to show the power of annotations. You can target methods, you can target fields, you can target a whole bunch of things. And I think that's really valuable. As you understand, given this in mind, if you go back and see Butterknife now and then actually understand how it works, a lot of this just sort of comes in place. I've found once I've understood these basic definitions, if I go back to popular open source repositories and actually see how they're done, it makes so much more sense. And even what Mike mentioned with actually going to see the generated code on the other side of the spectrum. I remember Jesse on a previous show mentioned, after he explained to us how Dagger internally sort of does its dependency resolution, he said, you should also walk through the generated code and actually then you can see what it does. So I think there's a huge benefit in, going and checking the actual metal and see the generated code and also the source code that allows this generation. There's a huge amount of understanding we would gain by just doing that.
Completely agree. Those targets, now when you're targeting, I guess, methods or various items, does that mean that it can only be applied to, that annotation can only be applied to a method or what?
Yeah, so if you, for example, say that the target is going to be a method and you try and apply that annotation to a field, I think the compiler will kind of complain to you and say, hey, this is the wrong kind of target.
So that would be a compile time warning. Interesting. That's good.
Which then kind of saves me from thinking that, like, hey, I can use this on a class and when it actually should only be used on a method or something of that nature.
Yeah, you can specify more than one type also in that target annotation. You can say that it's going to be a method or a field if your annotation would work on either one.
Element type. I guess that's like the thing. If folks go and see like the different like element type is an enum that you provide as a value to the target annotation. If folks have a look at that, you can see a whole list of the different ones.
I'm going to go back to the rewind a little bit and go back to the processor. If I want to implement my own annotation processor, is there any class that I should be extending to do this?
Yeah, so like I said before, the abstract processor class is kind of is a good place to start. It kind of gives you a bunch of abstract methods for you to implement that kind of get you mostly on your way.
And from what I remember from doing some reading a while back when I was playing with this, I think it was the process method where basically where all of your logic lies, where you can actually do all of your, annotation processing. And there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. I mean, you can, start writing your code yourself or even use, I think it's Java Poet. That's from Square too, am I right?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, you can use Java Poet to help write your code as well. Have you guys used that at all? Kaushik, have you used it?
I haven't had to use it, but I mean, just in the same annotations, because I remember, you mentioned it in your talk as well, right, Mike? The Java Poet thing.
It's pretty much like the go-to in the most annotation browsers you see, since basically the mechanism through most of them is generating some source files using Java Poet instead of concatenating a whole bunch of strings is definitely a good way to go.
Yeah, and I think that's like the principal point here. Like in the end, what the annotation processors do is you literally through code, I mean, it's like metaprogramming at its finest, right? You literally provide a string that would translate to like the Java source file, which is then converted to your like a compiled class, right? And doing this can be super error prone, and obviously, Square have to make our life easier. So they brought in this thing called Java Poet, which allows you to safely write that code without shooting yourself in the foot, right? I think that's the goal of Java Poet, right?
Yeah, exactly. It allows you to, use the Java compiler to avoid having to write like just a whole bunch of concatenated strings where it's very error prone.
Sweet. And in service of trying to write our annotations in an easier way, you also mentioned auto service. So when you write your own processor, like you mentioned the abstract processor, but there's also this library called auto service. How does auto service help us?
It's a bunch of tools for writing annotation browsers. But I think the one part that's great about it is, like we said before, you need to register your annotation processor with the compiler. Mm-hmm. And it involves creating some file, like JavaX something, annotation processing something in a meta inf directory. If you use the auto service annotation on your processor, it kind of generates that file for you. So you don't have to even think about things like that.
Oh, sweet. So like apart from using the abstract processor, processors, the implement like is an interface, and abstract processor is like a very basic implementation of the processor. If we use auto service, this in addition to that helps because a whole bunch of the things, like you said, registering your processor, that can be kind of a cumbersome process. And so we use this to help with that. And that is that what generates like all the info files, like the meta INF folders and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So
yeah, I know it's kind of like a meta to have an annotation processor in your annotation processor.
Auto service is by Google, right? Isn't Square?
Yeah, it's by Google.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So, okay. So
it's part of a bunch of source code generation suite. So like auto value is part of that auto service.
Oh yeah, that is the auto.
It's all part of auto. Yep. Yeah, it's just all part of auto. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you guys know if there are any limitations for annotation processing at all?
Yeah. So the main one that people seem to get tripped up by when they're thinking of like, oh, here's an idea for an annotation processor, how would I implement it, is that you can generate new source files, but you can't modify existing source files. So that's why you see this pattern of generating the code that does the repetitive thing and then having this this API that I describe as call into that generated code.
Let me follow up that with another question. So you mentioned that it doesn't modify the existing source file, which means you cannot say I have like this class file and I can't at any point say, actually, you know what, I want four other network calls to start happening if I have this parameter. That isn't exactly what it's meant for.
Yeah, so you can only generate like additional class files. You can't modify the existing class files.
Oh, okay. So essentially what it does is like it generates a bunch of classes that you can use as like this arsenal on the site, but it won't necessarily insert that directly into the existing class.
Yeah, so to go back to a concrete example, like the butter knife case, the generated files by the compiler have all the find view by ID and set on click listener stuff. And then when you call butterknife.bind, it does this reflection lookup to find. So in, let's say your class is main activity, you can look up the main activity $$ view binder class that has this bind method that does all the find view by ID stuff. You call that. And then, you know, all that code gets run, but it didn't actually change anything inside your main activity class.
Are there any other limitations that you think people should know about with using annotations? Like, is it easy to shoot yourself in the foot with annotations? Like, can you get to a point where your annotations does something terribly wrong? Or is it just that, well, the process of just writing the annotations are so complex that in all likelihood, you're going to get it right if it ever works?
That's not too complex. I mean, it's like anything else, like try using the debugger. There's a messenger class that allows you to kind of spit things out to as compiler warnings or errors. So if you're into like just printing out a whole bunch of debug information, that's kind of a good way to do that. You should also write tests. That's another good way to kind of make sure that you're doing things correctly.
Nice. And these are tests against the annotation processor.
Yep.
Okay. Do we have annotation processors in Kotlin?
Yeah, so I kind of was a little late to the Kotlin game. I wasn't as much of an early adopter as some, but it seems like nowadays the capped Gradle plugin, KAPT, is kind of the trick. It's the, I guess, replacement of the APT plugin for maybe Java code.
Was this recently introduced, or did Kotlin always have like the annotation processor, but it's just that we could never use it?
Yeah, I don't think it was a part of like JetBrains's like main idea for the 1.0, or it wasn't a hard requirement. And then they needed it because as part of their interop with Java, I think, you know, they saw that annotations are super popular in annotation processors. So they wanted to make sure it got added.
Right, right. That makes sense. And I imagine for a long time, that was also why we couldn't have things like Butterknife in Kotlin, right? Because there wasn't necessarily an annotation processor.
Yeah, definitely. There's actually a couple of good solutions. Jake wrote Cotter Knife. But there's even the extensions. But there's this Android extensions for Kotlin Gradle plugin that allows you to kind of reference IDs like almost through a synthetic import. That's pretty cool. So even if you don't have Butterknife, for instance, is a kind of an interesting solution there.
Speaking about Kotlin, what are your thoughts on Kotlin?
I'm very interested in the language. Kind of used it a little bit in our production app. And I'm looking forward to trying to give a few talks about it at the Android Summit in the DC area and the DC Dev Fest, hopefully. So if you guys are in the area, you know, feel free to come by.
Sure, that makes Definitely. Sense. I mean, if you can give us special seats, then why not?
for you guys, of course.
Oh, thank you. So you said you use it in production. Have you like found anything? What about build times? Are build times still an issue with Kotlin?
Yeah, so build times, it's a little bit slower. It hasn't been too much of a pain point for us. Like our original apprehension was that instant run doesn't quite work with Kotlin, but instant run seems to have like enough gotchas where it wasn't really working for us too much to begin with. So, you know, we didn't have to like forego it.
All right. So if I did want to learn more about annotations, you mentioned Jake's talk from 2014, I guess. There's your talk, which I think is also an excellent starting point. In fact, if folks haven't ever dealt with annotation processors, I would highly suggest that talk. It's a nice introductory talk that gives you the overall picture and also gives you like some pretty nifty examples. So I would recommend that. Beyond that, what are some good resources that you think we should do for annotation processors?
Yeah, so there's a few blog posts. There's one, I think I'm probably going to butcher his name, Hans Dorfman. And he did a talk as well at, I think, a DroidCon and has a good blog post about it. there's a few really good resources, but I think one, like you said earlier, just kind of dive into an open source project. Like Butterknife is a good example because it's kind of simple. Dagger, I personally think, is maybe not a good starting point, but it's a good annotation processor. Also, is a good example. And then I have a repo on my GitHub that I created for the talk that's pretty simple as well.
Right, that's the one I was actually going to ask about. It's called Aftermath.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
And it's it's just a kind of a start activity for result annotation processor. It's kind of just very simple. Does one thing, and it's a good starting point if you want to get involved in it.
Perfect. Do you have any parting thoughts about annotation processors? Anything that we should be doing, we shouldn't be doing?
I mean, if you can come up with a great idea, I mean, a lot of great annotation processors are out there solving a lot of good problems. But even if you're not doing an annotation processor, I definitely think make sure you're checking out the support annotations library, because it's not a lot of work to add them, and sometimes can save you a lot of time with maybe bugs down the road.
Thank you so much, Mike. This has been pretty helpful. I'm super stoked. I think annotations, I started out initially in the show saying, one of my colleagues mentioned, because we were having this debate between, Java, Swift, I mean, obviously the comparison is not completely fair, but yeah, Kotlin, Swift, Java, Ruby. And one of my colleagues mentioned, annotations are essentially the way you can eliminate and make Java a much nicer language. For example, if you see in Java 8, yep. 9, in later sort of versions, this is how they managed to do it. So I think it makes sense. And that's also a good reason why Square has sort of brought out so many of these libraries that make it easy for us. Like Retrofit, for example, is I think the primordial example for this, right? You can just use annotations and then get rid of a whole bunch of code. I'm super stoked about getting and writing more annotations. So yeah, thank you so much for this.
Thanks for coming on.
If folks want to reach out to you, what would be the best way?
Yeah, so I blog at michaelevans.org and my Twitter handle is m_evans10.
Okay, so any annotation processor debugging questions, you can shoot them directly to your email, right? That would be an appropriate way. I would like to mention your name on Reddit, but I think that would be incorrect. As per Reddit etiquette, that would be docking you, right? So I don't think I should do that. But he's one of the moderators, so that kind of limits the number of users. So and thank you so much for your work on the Android Dev Reddit as well. It's super useful, and half the time, a whole bunch of interesting links and resources come up with that.
Yeah, I can't take all the credit. Other moderators do an amazing job. Oh, I have an awesome pick for you guys. It was just a tweet, but it was a really great Android Studio tip. Yeah, so there's a great tweet by Jason Atwood, and it's my Android Studio cool feature of the week. You can use the function F1 keystroke over a style, and it shows you the entire inheritance tree of the style. So all the attributes and where they came from.
Very cool, very cool. Don, if folks want to send you some more annotation questions.
They can reach me on Twitter at Don Felker, that's D-O-N-N, or at donfelker.com.
Perfect. And if you have annotation questions, you're better off sending it to either Mike or Don. Don't send it to me. But if you just want to have a chat or say something else goofy, then I'm probably your man for that. And I'm Kaushik Gopal at Twitter. And my website is kaush.co. So feel free to go on there. And if you have any questions, feedback for the show, Fragmented Cast is our Twitter handle. So feel free to shoot all your queries, requests, and suggestions there. Thank you all for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode. Thanks again, Mike.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
We want to thank our sponsor for this episode, BuddyBuild. If you're looking for a continuous integration server with a bunch of additional cool features, check them out. You can find more at fragmentedpodcast.com/BuddyBuild. Thanks again, BuddyBuild.